Hey guys, it's me, Tim.
And me, Camille.
So the last couple of episodes, we've been doing our favorite kind of shows, which are the ones where we like don't have to talk.
Yeah, the ones where we get to do more listening.
They are really, really fun to produce, and we really like doing them. And we're going to keep that going.
Yeah, this episode today is super special, though, because it's a three-part collaboration between us, a podcast in Baltimore, and a community organization here in St. Louis.
So, the podcast from Baltimore is called Outs of the Blocks. And do yourself a favor right now before we get too deep into this. And go ahead and push pause on us and subscribe to their podcast. It's Out of the Blocks. I'll give you a second to do that.
Okay, you done?
You good?
Okay.
Got it? Okay, good. So anyways, here's how their show works. Basically, they go into neighborhoods and just collect people's stories. They're sort of their... Their line is, they have the radical agenda of having no agenda. So they go and they do a lot of deep listening, and then they take all those stories and they make shows out of them. And as if that's not all cool enough, they put original music just specific to that episode on each of their podcasts.
So the guys who do this, their names are Aaron Henkin and Wendell Patrick. And we met them a few months ago and we just really clicked, and we call ourselves like podcast cousins because their show is kind of like our show and it's just great. But then they came to us a few months ago with this interesting proposal.
Yes, they said that they want to come to our town and do the show that they've been doing in Baltimore, except do it in St. Louis. And we were like, totally, let's do this thing. And then the question was, like, where are we going to go? So we reached out to some folks at an organization called For the Ville, in particular, a guy named Aaron Williams.
Mm-hmm. And between the three organizations, we came up with something that we think is really, really special.
So we've already done, I think, more talking than what we want to do in this episode.
Mm-hmm.
So we should just get to the episode.
Let's just get to the episode.
Yeah. So from St. Louis Public Radio and PRX.
This is We Live Here.
A show for people somewhere.
Somewhere.
On the woke spectrum. So without any further ado, this is Out of the Ville, a collaboration between Out of the Blocks, For the Ville, and us at We Live Here.
Enjoy.
Here you have an African-American neighborhood with an overwhelming amount of history that has gone neglected for the past 50 years, really. Aaron Williams. I'm about to drive you around and show you some of the historic landmarks in the neighborhood.
This neighborhood looks like Baltimore in a lot of ways, and that there's a lot of plywood over a lot of doors and windows around here.
Yeah. The Ville neighborhood is about 60% vacant, and that's a combination of vacant homes and vacant lots. So this house right here is the one that desegregated housing across St. Louis and began the exodus out of the Ville. Supreme Court decided that racial restrictive covenants could not be recognized by state and federal courts anywhere in the United States. It was sort of like a gift and a curse. If you talk to a lot of what I call legacy residents in this neighborhood, people who have been here forever, they'll tell you that the demise of the Ville was desegregation. Which is crazy, right? Because when we say desegregation, we speak of it as a good thing, right? We don't want segregated neighborhoods. But the Ville was built out of segregation. African Americans were literally confined to this one square mile. And because of that, they built a completely self-sustained community where you did not have to leave. You were born here. You went to elementary school, middle school, high school. You studied college here, and then you turn around and worked here. So the dollars recycled in the neighborhood. Your pastor lived down the street from you. Your teacher lived around the corner from you. And they built something that worked, right? It was a model of resiliency. But when desegregation happened, you know, I guess people got more options, so they took advantage of it. You know, one thing is that I always try to remind people, especially African Americans, is that we are still human, right? So we're going to do human things. So when we receive more options, we're going to take advantage of more options, right? And it's not out of ill intent. It's unfortunate and also good at the same time that desegregation is what allowed people to move out and caused like an exodus out of the neighborhood. Started in like the mid 1950s and then progressing on through the 80s and 90s when this neighborhood really started to take a turn and begin to look like what you see now. This is it. This is that gift and that curse.
...1,242 empty structures, 1,700 vacant lots. This is a tale of two cities. I am Samuel Lewis Moore, Jr. I am a alderman in the city of St. Louis's 4th Ward, where all the African-American history is held. We live like the Jetsons compared to the Flintstones. Yabba dabba do, but we're not having a gay old time. It is horrific, like Iraq, Syria, or Lebanon. It looks like it's been bombed out. That's why I do my politics different than the rest of them do, because you get down there with the established quo and get them suits on and get the big head, and it's a poor man's job. It's $34,000 and all you can steal. And my colleagues, most of them are lawyers, and they don't want to work full-time because they wouldn't be able to work their regular jobs. But working in this community is a full-time position. You have to work 24 hours. You have to work it in your sleep because of the contrast of disparity. It's visible. I have to govern in an unorthodox way and let the people know, let St. Louis know, shame on you for letting this community get in the condition that it's in. And I'm a fighter, that's why I wear this chain on my neck with the boxing glove. I'm in the Boxing Hall of Fame. I know how to fight. I am 68 years old, and I've been an alderman for 11 years. When I pass the baton to the next runner, I want them to take it and run very fast with it and be able to have the wherewithal and the know-how to run a community such as this and to keep working to put it back in perspective. We can't go down there and just, I'm an alderman, and cross your leg and sit down there with a 9-piece suit on with socks and drawers matching and do nothing. You have to fight for the people that voted you in, because it is a dog fight.
Never let yesterday take up too much of your today. Thomasina Clark. I am a lifelong resident of the Ville. When I was brought home from Homer G. Phillips Hospital as a baby, I came home to the home that I am still living in today. I am kind of invested in the neighborhood. I bought the building next door to me, and I'm doing a total gut rehab on that building. I like my neighborhood. I don't like how it has turned out, but I'm looking forward to greater things. The building directly across the street from me is hidden by all the overgrowth, which takes us to what makes me not like it now. And it's the fact that the city doesn't take care of my community. When you ask the city for years, and I've been on them now for 2 years, to do something about that building directly across the street from my house, I'm sure my neighbor who lives next door to that house has all kind of vermin running in and out because it's just so overgrown. That's the part that hurts when no one's taking care of it. I can't take care of it because I don't have the equipment to do it. If I did, it would have been done. But the city's not doing their job. I would like people to make an investment in my community. I would like people to see it not as the rundown, raggedy neighborhood that it is, but to have a vision. If you could have seen the building that I bought next door before we started working on it, you probably would have said, why are you putting your money into that? But when you see it in its finished stage, you're going to say, oh my God. Gosh, look at this lovely place. And In my neighborhood right now, my two-story, nine-room brick building is worth $38,000. If I could pick it up and move it anywhere else, it could be upwards of about $200,000. Location, location, location.
Michael Burns, we're in the Ville community in North St. Louis City, St. Louis, Missouri. Right now, we're on Sarah, right at Lincoln, and we're headed north, and we're going to go to St. Louis Avenue in the 4100 block. I've been in real estate for about 30 years. I'm a licensed real estate broker in the state of Missouri as well as Illinois. And one of our inspectors came to inspect the apartment right here at 4042 St. Louis Avenue, first floor. And when I found out that that was an apartment that I used to live in, you know, from the age of 3 to 13, I said, whoa, I'm gonna go ahead and do that inspection. So I took the packet and I came to the location and went into the unit, and the unit did pass the inspection. It's been totally remodeled since the time that I was here in the early 70s. It's now a two-bedroom unit, whereas at that time it was just three small rooms, a living room, a bedroom, and a kitchen. And that's where actually my mother and my grandmother and myself lived. So all three of us was in one bedroom, believe it or not, in that time.
And that is the apartment, the building that we're standing right in front of right now.
That's correct. So when I came to do the inspection, and you're talking about maybe about 6 months ago, I was fine. I inspected the unit. I passed it because they took care of the electrical issues. And then just tears started flowing, just thinking about all of the memories. So I can remember one time just looking out that window right there, watching my next door neighbors get ready to go to a picnic. And they saw me looking out the window, and me being the only child, they knew we didn't have a car and didn't go anywhere much. And she asked me, hey, you know, Mike, would you like to go with us on the picnic? You know, so those fond memories such as those would just kind of come back into my memory. And I'm telling you, the tears would just flow. And I never thought that 6 months later, the very building that in which we're talking about is one that my company manages. So I can go in anytime I want to now. I'm the president of Northside Community Housing Incorporated. And our purpose is to not only develop housing, moderate to low income housing, but we also will connect individuals with empowerment opportunities so that we can make sure that our residents are connected to whatever resources are needed in the community. You know, that's the main reason why I'm back in the community now, is so that I can see exactly what I can do and what I can contribute to making it better and trying to, you know, stop what almost appears to be generational curses in the area, especially when it comes to drug-related activity and criminal activity.
Good morning. My name is Stephen Boda. I'm the pastor here at Bridge of Hope.
I'm Michael Robinson. I pastor Destiny Family Church.
Pastor Mike and I are partners in this craziness.
Sometimes I have to remind him what color he is. But he's a white guy. He's a little bit older than me. I'm 44-year-old black male, and he is a 55-year-old white male with a big Santa Claus beard with a heart of gold.
We quickly identified that our mindsets were very, not just similar, but almost like we're reading from the same book. And actually we are.
We believe in the concept of Matthew 25 that says that when I was hungry, you fed me.
All right. Well, let me pray. Dear Heavenly Father, we thank you for this morning. We thank you for this food. We thank you for the hands that prepared it. We pray that you would nourish our bodies and nourish our souls as we talk with each other and hang out with each other. In Christ's name I pray. Amen.
We got sausage, pork, turkey, eggs, cheese, taters, pancakes.
Well, we are here at a converted elementary school. It used to be Little Williams School, and even further back it was Little Williams School for Colored Children. We've converted this into our space. We have individuals that will come from around the corner. They live in vacant buildings, and they come in to receive hot showers, washer and dryer. We have washer and dryer here that they can use. And they come for breakfast. We have lunch as well on Monday, Wednesdays, and Thursdays. And a lot of them just come in for conversation.
Oh, you know, love these pancakes. Love these. Whoa, look, that made the spot. Darrell Hamilton. In my neighborhood, I'm the go-to guy. I do a little everything. Roofing, drywall, plumbing, you know. I got a lot of skills. I don't have any paperwork behind my name, but I got a lot of skills.
You living a pretty stable life right now, economically?
My life is not stable. You know, I'm next to homeless, no insurance. Every day is a struggle.
Every day is a challenge for me. I pray a lot, and I keep going. Virginia Savage, this is the sign-in desk. We have a sheet here. They sign in and they check off anything that they need for the day. If they need a shower, I would give them a towel, face towel, soap, razor, toothbrush, toothpaste. If they need to do laundry, I would give them detergent. If they need just to talk, they can sit right here and I talk to them. I was just like everyone else that comes through this door. I was homeless and I was on drugs. And I stayed right across the street in a shell. And I came and I met Pastor Steve here. Steve started pastoring me, praying for me, and I've been here ever since.
My name is Anthony Jackson. I'm actually homeless at this point, but I do have a little employment that keeps me afloat. Actually today, I have a job that I'm gonna go to, doing some landscaping work, and it's gonna probably take me like 3 or 4 hours to do. After that, I usually go to the library and look for other employment opportunities, and after that, it's on to bed and waiting for the next day.
Where are you gonna sleep tonight?
Well, I sleep in my vehicle.
There it is,
the little blue Honda, and I've had it for a couple of years. This is a Honda Civic DX. It's a 1991, so you can do the math. It's what, 26 years old? I think it's a very, very great vehicle, you know.
How long have you been living in the car?
I've been living in this car for like about 5 weeks.
We're going to take a quick little break, but when we come back, more of Out of the Ville from Out of the Blocks, Us That We Live Here, and For the Ville.
All right, we're back with more stories from the Ville neighborhood in North St. Louis.
Marianne Tillman, MD, pediatrician by specialty. And I came to Homer Phillips as a regular intern in July 1960 and stayed there until it closed in August of 1979.
So the hospital itself, it was like a segregated hospital, right? Talk about that.
Actually, it was steeped in politics. There was just no place for the black patients in St. Louis to get really adequate treatment. This was at the time a really modern facility where we had the things we needed to treat the patients, but more importantly, we had the dedicated persons that we needed to treat the patients.
I've heard stories about just what a fraught moment it was when they closed the doors on the place. I heard it was a real scene. Tell me that story.
Yes, because we had known that it was going to close. They had tried to close it, and the Save Homer Phillips people were camped out because it was August, and it was hot. Camp out and sleep outside on the ground. Doesn't matter, it's too hot. If you don't have air conditioning, you can't sleep inside. So they were there watching to keep them from closing it. So they did not have sufficient manpower to close it. So they went back on August the 17th. And the policeman stopped me, and I'm telling him I'm trying to go to work. What's going on? And he drew the nightstick on me. So then I, you know, turned the car around and drove around to the other side and then walked back, you know, to the hospital. But there were dogs, there were riot guns, just really, you know, a real war, like you were going over to fight the Japanese overseas or something in World War II.
And what kind of an effect did it have on the families who relied on the medical services of that hospital?
Many of them, they waited until it was a real emergency. Then, of course, they called the ambulance. And at that time, many persons were a little bit afraid of going to Barnes Hospital because of the treatment that had been received when the patients were housed in the basement and so forth. And if you're in the basement, you know, you're going to be the last persons that they get down to see. It was inevitable, the closure. Every 4 years it would come up. You know, that was each election, as I said, they were closing Homer Phillips when I came. So I really just said, okay, you know, it's finally happened. It was the time when you have been expecting something for a long, long time. Although it was almost like you expect the person to die, and you know they are going to die soon. But, you know, you just continue to live in hope.
My name is Gwendolyn Gloria Williams Pennington, but I go by Gwen. I was born in the Ville. I grew up on Cope Brilliant. And so then we moved from 4300 Cope Brilliant to 4218 East North Market, which was around the corner from Homer Phillips Hospital. Sometimes we would say, well, let's go play over at Homer Phillips. And at Homer Phillips, on the south side of Homer Phillips, there was a wing where they kept the mentally ill people. You're not going to believe this. Our play was to holler up at the people on 2 South. We said, we go over here and meddle the people on 2 South. We would holler up and the people would holler back.
Like and they would holler back at you? Like, what kind of conversations would you have?
I don't know what we were saying to the people. We would holler up there, hey, so-and-so. And they would holler back and say something to us, and then we would holler back and say something to them. It just seemed like fun. And that's what we call going out to play. But then the other side of on that same side of the hospital, now mind you, this was in the 40s. So we didn't have any air conditioning. So all the windows were up. And so you could hear everything that was going on wherever, whoever's house or whatever. So that was also the maternity ward. And in the maternity ward, you could hear the women in labor. So we would say, let's go over and listen to the women having babies. So we would listen to the women having babies. And our cousin lived next door to us, and she had 13 children, and my mother only had 3 children. And all we knew was Verdi would go down the pathway to the hospital, and then in another couple of days, she'd come home with a baby. And so we thought the babies must have been for sale. So we used to say, Mama, why can't you walk down the driveway and bring us back a baby? And so she said, well, that's not the way babies come. And we said, yes, it is, because Bertie got a lot of babies, and you don't have but 3 babies. So we said, well, we'll give you a quarter if you go over there and buy us a baby. So we would laugh about that.
My career, I was a flight attendant, and I was a flight attendant for 26 years. And I just want to let you know, when I would fly over the arch and come across over the Ville, I would sit next to a passenger and I would point out, I would tell them, I said, that's Homer G. Phillips down there. See the 4 corners of the, that's where I was born. Then I showed them Sumner, and then I showed them Turner, and I just let them know that that was the Ville. what was interesting was that whomever I chose to tell the story to, they listened and wanted to listen. Cynthia Kennedy. My father was from East St. Louis. Actually, he is one of the survivors of the 1917 riot of East St. Louis. The story is my grandmother built a raft to save her family. My grandfather hid with the children. After she built the raft, they got on the raft and came across the Mississippi River, which took them 4 hours to get across. And then they ended up over in St. Louis, and that's how they were saved from the riot.
And when you say saved from the riot, like, help folks understand what was happening over there.
It was a strike, and the white people went on strike. So they started hiring the blacks, and they didn't like that. And so a big riot started behind that. Well, they were burning the black families' homes. They were shooting them. They were killing them. They were, you know, whenever they saw someone that was black, they killed them. And so they just had to hide and try to save their family.
That riot that you're referring to, here on Wikipedia, it's called East St. Louis Massacres. You've heard it by that name as well?
Yes, sir, I have.
May and July 1917, an outbreak of labor and race-related violence that caused the death of at least 40 black people. So he came across on a raft to escape the tyranny of what was going on over there.
Yes. My grandmother made the raft out of doors and anything that she thought that she can gather and put together.
And so from there, they found their way to the Ville.
Yes. It's sad to hear things that happen like that. I'm just glad I'm here.
My name is Oscar Upchurch. I went to Sumner High School, which is 4248 West Cottage, for all the people that don't know. And my experience in the Ville was a very rewarding one, because the pride that you get being a Sumnerite is, you know, you just can't take that away. It's a special fraternity slash sorority. Of all the people that went there, Dick Gregory, Tina Turner, Arthur Ashe, four-star General Benjamin O. Davis, Senator William Clay, and there was a sense of pride and fulfillment in not only with Sumner, but at the entire Ville area. Well, I was there from 74 to 78. And back then, afros was the style for everybody, boys and girls, and whatever clothes fashion was in at the time. But that was a fun time for me, because a lot of the friendships that I forged back then, we're together now.
Tell me about the annual homecoming game, the football game, the teams, the rivalry, and just the festivities that day, that weekend.
Okay. The homecoming game is between Sumner High School, the oldest black high school west of the Mississippi, and Vashon, the second oldest black high school west of the Mississippi. And back in the day, the early 70s, halfway through the 80s, it was about the football game. But now it's more of a fellowship thing. And I don't know, but I got a good estimate that there's going to be close to 3,000 people there tomorrow.
Really, it's the tailgate, man. I don't even know if anybody really goes in the game too much. We just hang out right here. And I mean, and actually, what would I say? It's good to see the school is still here, but there's really no neighborhood anymore. So what the Ville organization hopefully is doing is bringing residential back to the community so it can be built back up. What's up, Glenn?
It feels like a neighborhood today, though, doesn't it?
Oh, yeah. Well, that's why we come out like this, is because we remember what Sumner was.
I was graduating in 1981. I ran track and played field hockey and did pom-pom.
I graduated Sumner in 1968.
1959.
1978.
1984.
1975.
I've been wandering around. Everyone's tailgating. You guys have got, you kicked it up a notch. Tell me what you got. You're under this tent. Tell me what you got. What's on the menu today?
Fried fish, chicken wings, barbecue, rib tips, hot dogs, bratwurst, polar sausage, baked beans, string beans, potato salad, and spaghetti.
And
You literally got like a portable deep fryer right out here on the yard for fish.
Yeah, they come to my house, so.
What's boiling in there right now?
Catfish nugget. This is real good. It looks real good.
My name is Chris McNeil. I'm the principal over at Sumner High School. And it's just an amazing, amazing place to be a part of. Just historic. If you just walk through the halls and you see all the famous alumni that came to Sumner High School and walk through these halls, man, it's just an awe-inspiring thing, man. So just kind of be in the school and serve as a leader here, man, is incredible. As you could just see, man, just around, there's nothing like this. Nothing like this anywhere else, man. This is a special, special place. It's hallowed ground almost.
Tell me about the game today. First, let me have you commentate, color commentary here. What's going on?
Yes, our football team is coming out, hopefully to get a victory against the Vashon Wolverines. We're the home of the Bulldogs, and so they're getting ready. They're pumped up, they're jacked, and they're ready to go.
You can do it. Take a man 65. I'm going to be rooting for you. You're the biggest one on the team. Take a man.
All right, cheerleader. All right, yeah.
First and 10 at the 48-yard
line. I have probably listened to this show 3 or 4 times at least. And every time I do it, I'm just sort of speechless at the end of it.
I'm just always like smiling. This is like one of the most fun thing we've done this season, I think.
I know. It's really, really special. It's truly a piece of art. And we want to make sure that we give a very special thank you to the folks who made this wonderful show that you just heard. Aaron Henkin is the voice that you heard asking a lot of the questions. And Wendell Patrick, he is the musician who put that original score behind all those stories. They are with Out of the Blocks. They're a podcast from WYPR, the public radio station in Baltimore. Do yourself a favor and go subscribe to that show. It is great.
Mm-hmm. We also want to give a big thank you and shout out to Aaron Williams from For the Ville, and also the staff at WYPR.
And also thank you to Northside Community Housing. They were sort of are sort of like home away from home for a week.
We just kind of embedded that week that we spent in the Ville and just worked out of there, and they were very great hosts.
One last thing. If you want to know more about this historic, special neighborhood in North St. Louis, the Ville, you need to go to fortheville.org. That's the number 4, theville.org. Lots of great resources there for you.
Yeah, we hope you guys enjoyed this one.
We Live Here is produced by me, Tim Lloyd.
And me, Camille Stanley.
Shula Newman is the executive editor of St. Louis Public Radio.
And from St. Louis Public Radio and PRX, this is We Live Here.
Support for this podcast comes from the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. From PR.